You're listening to episode number 67 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
Welcome back to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where we make real science real simple. We're on episode number 67 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, and we've got a great show for you today, where we're going to talk about part two of high-intensity interval training programming workouts. Before that, I'm going to get into a couple of quick announcements here, things that you want to take a note on. The website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, episode show notes receptacle, and online training plan store is available at tailwind-coaching.com. And the podcast show notes for this episode are at tailwind-coaching.com/67. And you're going to want to remember that because I'm going to be giving away a nice freebie at the end of the podcast show notes. And that freebie is actually going to be a high-intensity interval cheat sheet of sorts. It's going to give you the different frequencies that I recommend and typically program a high-intensity interval training intervals that I talk about in this episode, and it will also give you a couple of notes on that, so it's something you can use to plan your own workouts. But head on over to the website and visit the online training plan store for your complete training solutions for all your major season goals, grand fondos, races, rides, and general fitness. Now, that's of course if you don't want to download something or get a one-on-one coach. If you're comfortable planning your own workouts, then check it out. If you're comfortable following my workouts, check it out. Don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support option to get a coach for a small percentage of what it would normally cost you. One-on-one coaching costs you about $100 a month. In this case, you buy the off-the-shelf training plan, the downloadable training plan. I help coach you through it, adapt the training plan to your needs, and help you make the most out of it, all for a measly pittance of $30 a month, and that price gets better the more that you purchase. And again, to complement those training plans, I encourage you to sign up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter at tailwind-coaching.com/signup. Don't forget to share that link with your friends because that'll give you free coaching advice, workouts, and fitness information, and of course, special offers, coupon codes, etc., all delivered right into your inbox. Don't forget that'll also give you a free one-month training plan as well. So keep a lookout for that. If you need to get a hold of me, you can contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com, or you can follow me by clicking any of the icons on the lower left-hand corner, the bottom footer of the website at tailwind-coaching.com. You can follow me on Stitcher, you can follow me on Strava, you can subscribe to the RSS feed, you can find me by email, you can find me on Facebook at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, and on Twitter at coachrobdc. You can also find me on Zwift once in a while. I'll let you guys figure that one out. There'll be a Zwift fartlek training video coming out real soon, which will sort of piggyback on what we're going to talk about today. And do me a favor while you're over at the website, or if you're listening to this on iTunes, hit the 5-star rating button. It helps me move up the ranks of the podcast, helps me reach more people the higher the rank is. And of course, the more people I can reach, the more people I can help, the more I can get this advice out there, and the more I can grow a powerful and efficient cycling community. And I can help people have more fun riding their bikes because honestly, that's why I do this. That's what it's all about. It's absolutely what it's all about. And again, of course, the sponsor for this particular podcast is Stages Cycling. I have used the Stages Cycling power meter for a long, long period of time. My wife has one on her bike. I use it on my racing bike. I use it on my indoor training bike. I stand by their products. I enjoy using their products for their simplicity and their reliability, and I have full and complete faith in their products. So as I made the announcement, Tailwind Coaching is now an affiliate for Stages Cycling, so click the link in the podcast show notes, tailwind-coaching.com/67, and if you're in the market for a power meter, click on through and your purchase will help to support the Tailwind Coaching podcast, bandwidth, and hosting costs and all that kind of stuff. Help me keep the podcast free, folks. Of course, as always, there is a free discount code at the end of the podcast, tailwind-coaching.com/67, and that'll be able to help you take a few percentage points off your purchase if you're buying downloadable training plans for the new year. All right, Let's get into the meat and potatoes of today's topic, and that's going to be part two of high-intensity interval training, programming your workouts. Okay, high-intensity interval training, part two. Before I get started with the real true meat and potatoes of today's post, I really need to get through a couple of questions on VO2 max. If you remember correctly, we talked about VO2 max in the last episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. You can find the show notes on that at tailwind-coaching.com/66 if you want to refer back to it. But I did get a couple of questions about VO2 max, specifically for older cyclists. And this is probably actually got about a dozen questions or so on this. So obviously this is something that I needed to expound upon a little bit more here. But the first part of this is the expression of VO2 max. VO2 max is actually more than just a number. The number of units, or the units in which VO2 max is expressed, is in milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body weight per minute. And that's usage of milliliters per kilogram per minute. That basically means that your body takes in a set amount of air into its lungs. That air has a set concentration of oxygen within it. Now, if you're using a $10,000 Metcart, you can actually measure the difference in oxygen and carbon dioxide concentration between the air you breathe in and the air you expire. And that, through some calculation, will give you essentially your VO2 max, or the amount of oxygen in milliliters per kilogram per minute that your body is actually able to take in and use. Note that the biggest, most important part of this is being able to use the amount of oxygen. It's not being able to take it in. The greater tidal volume or the greater lung capacity you have, the better off you are. But that won't do you any good at all if your body simply can't process it, okay? So that leads to the second set of questions that I got very frequently, and that was ways you actually increase your VO2 max. Physiologically, how does your VO2 max increase? And this is actually very interesting, because there's a lot of discussion right now about Chris Froome's biological data, and a lot of the information on his biological data is essentially revolving around his VO2 max. To be perfectly honest, they didn't measure enough to make anything else complementary or worthwhile, so VO2 max is pretty much all you have to go on at this point. But VO2 max can increase in a number of ways. And if you look at the expression of units, milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body mass per minute. So you can do a couple of things. You can actually decrease your body mass, all right? So if you maintain the same efficiency and you take in the same amount of oxygen for a smaller body mass, your VO2 max will go up. You can also improve or increase your lung capacity and tidal volume. You can increase the amount of air your body is able to take into the lungs, and in theory, improve the amount of air or oxygen that is transferred from the very tiny air sacs in the minutiae of the lungs called alveoli. You can improve the transport of oxygen from the air in your lungs to the hemoglobin in your blood. That's another way to do it. That increases the milliliters of oxygen that is actually transported through your body's working tissues and can be used. You can improve your efficiency. You can improve the metabolic enzymes that help to pull that oxygen out into the cell, run it through the mitochondria, and produce energy that way. You can improve the stroke volume, or the amount of blood that your heart pumps. Right, this is accomplished through increasing that plasma volume, like we talked about last time, and a couple of other things. Another way to do it, and in fact the way that most professionals choose to do it, if you can't note the sarcasm in my voice, it can't be any more obvious, really. The way most professionals choose to do this is through increasing their hemoglobin mass. Now, increased hemoglobin mass is a side effect of athletic training, both aerobic and aerobic, or and anaerobic, excuse me. However, it's also a very positive outcome of a number of doping modalities, if you will, EPO or human growth hormone or any of them, there's a significant increase in hemoglobin mass. The increase in hemoglobin mass is the amount of oxygen-binding protein present in a red blood cell that helps to transport that oxygen through the body. So the more space your body has to suck up oxygen and take it to your body's tissues, the more VO2 max you will have. Next question I got about VO2 max, and that, actually that's a very simplistic way we increase VO2 max. If we can get into the physiology of it, maybe someday I'll actually do a real physiological podcast about it, but it can get into some real deep stuff. So moving on, raising VO2 max. Can we actually raise our VO2 max? Well, here's the issue, and I've spoken about this before, but we typically, as human beings, never really hit the genetic potential of our VO2 max. So VO2 max is essentially set by our genetic potential, what we're capable of at a top-end level, at the absolute best we will ever be, is determined by our genetic makeup and our genes. Do we ever reach that? Some people do. Professionals probably are bumping into the upper limits of what they're capable of doing in terms of genetic VO2 max. This is part of the reason why it's so bizarre to see a cyclist like Chris Horner at 40 or 41 years old winning the Vuelta a España. Because at any time after the age of 25, you begin to lose anywhere between 1% and 0.5%, somewhere in that neighborhood, of your VO2 max potential overall. So if you have a genetic VO2 max potential of 70 milliliters per kilogram per minute, and you lose, say, 1% every year after 25, that should mean that Chris Horner, assuming he was that guy, that 70 mil per kilogram per minute, he should only have a VO2 max in theory of 55 mil per kilogram per minute. That's really pretty tough to reconcile when you consider a guy who's 40, 41, whatever, is able to win a Grand Tour against guys that are 10 years his junior. It's interesting. But the point here is, we typically are not going to raise our VO2 max over and above our genetic potential. What we are able to do is improve the amount of our genetic potential that we are using. So a great example here is the couch to 5K model, or the couch to racer model, or the couch to Gran Fondo model. Somebody gets a bike and they start to ride, and they say huge, huge improvements in that first year. Well, as a couch potato, you're maybe only ever able to use 50% of your VO2 max. Maybe. Sometimes 35% of your VO2 max. So if you had a VO2 max of 100, if you were an outstanding, you were a world-class freak with a VO2 max of 100 mil per kilo per minute, and you're a couch potato using 35% of it, you have essentially have a VO2 max limit of 35 mil per kilo per minute. As you start to train, there's a lot of room under that 100 mil per kilo per minute for you to actually improve. So in the space of a year, you might go from using 35% of your VO2 max to a VO2 max of 70, doubling. Huge improvement in speed. Yet you're not really raising your genetic VO2 max. So there's a differential here. When we start talking about raising your VO2 max, we're talking about raising the amount that you have available to use, but it's still underneath your genetic potential, that ceiling of your genetic potential. All right, so keep that in mind when we talk about raising VO2 max. And I hope those questions, the answers to those questions, actually help to put to rest some of the questions that are people are continuing to shoot me and wonder about. So hopefully that'll put some clarity out there for that. Next, getting into programming high intensity interval training. All right, programming high intensity interval training is not as easy as you would think it might be. And effectively programming HIIT type training can be a real pitfall, especially for someone who is not prepared for the intensity of the work or underestimates the intensity of the work they're doing. and by which case will cause some major issues with their training performance and capabilities. So, some key points to remember here when we're programming HIIT type training. We are programming short workouts with very high intensities versus the long workout with low intensity. Now, this seems very obvious, but all too often do I have people ignore the first part of that, short workouts with very high intensities, and they go out for a long workout with a high intensity, and then they can't understand why they're unable to move the next day, why they're unable to work out the next day, why they're unable to complete their interval sessions. All right, the long workout needs to have low intensity because your body simply cannot function at such high intensity, at such a high level for that period of time. High intensity training is a very limited commodity, mainly because the energy processes that you are using are very finite in supply. You cannot, listen to me, you cannot go above threshold into the red zone forever. It can't be done. That is the definition of super threshold work. And that's exactly what these short workouts with incredibly high intensity are designed to do, is to get a lot of intensity, a lot of bang for your buck, a lot of training stress in a very short period of time. And to create the adaptations we talked about last time, back in high intensity interval training part one. Programming starts generally with one session per week. Now listen to me, listen carefully. One session per week. And yes, you're going to be sitting there questioning me going, but coach, it's December. I'm doing base training. Why am I doing high intensity work in December? Listen to me. If you do not vary your training, you will fall into a rut where you stop improving. Variety is the spice of life. That's true of training as well. Variety is the spice of training, and physiological variation is necessary for your body to continue to improve. So, even during the base phase, you're going to start with around one session per week. Do not get crazy. I know way too many cyclists who love to do this. They love to get crazy and they love to say, geez, if I can get the same benefits in an hour that I can get in 4 hours, why am I not just doing four or five days a week of this? Because you'll do 4 or 5 days a week of this for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and then you'll just want to do nothing but sleep on the couch or sit watching football eating Doritos. I love Doritos. I don't know why. But the potential and the, oh God, the desire is there for sure. Start with only one per week because the potential to overdo it and overtrain is extremely high when you're using HIIT type training. As you progress through the season, once you finish with late base type work and start into build work, you can progress towards 2 training days per week of HIIT training. You can even progress towards 3 days per week for very specific reasons. If you are looking to peak, you'll be doing almost all of your work is HIIT training. Those peak weeks are going to be almost all HIIT training. The idea is you want to keep your training stress moderate. You want to keep your form high, and that means letting your body taper off but staying sharp. So decrease the volume, increase the intensity significantly. You may go from doing 10 hours a week of training to doing 2 or 3 hours a week of training during your peak phase, but it's going to be all HIIT type work. And that progression from one training day per week to 3 training days or more per week is a little bit varied between every individual, and that's something very important to take note of. Typically, I recommend in the base weeks, you start with one high intensity training day per week. Usually the goal is aerobic to raise your VO2 max. We just talked about that a little bit more, and you can refer back to high intensity interval training part one for some more information on that. But typically it's an aerobic type work that you want to use to raise your VO2 max so that you can raise that ceiling on your fitness. So that as you get into your build phase, you have a lot more space to bring your FTP up, and you have a lot more space to, again, improve your fitness. As you progress into build phase, that's the point where I typically will start testing 2 days per week of high intensity interval training with my clients, my athletes. If they tolerate those 2 days well, then I know we can start tacking on a little bit more towards the end of the build phase into specialty work and towards peak work. All right. When would you be doing 3 days a week of high intensity work? You'd be doing these on climbing specialty days, on criterium specialty days, things where you're really working hard on the fundamentals of your weaknesses. And usually weaknesses are things like climbing, like sprinting, etc., etc. Those are typically partially aerobic, but you're starting to mix in anaerobic capacity type work. This is sharpening your body. These are the times when you're going to be doing the really hard stuff, but it's going to be really short workouts. All right. Now, the key, as I've mentioned throughout all this, is very, very, very judicious use of high intensity training. Because again, too much, too soon in your training program will overload your physiological capacity to adapt. Once you overload your physiological capacity to adapt to the training stress you're putting upon your body begins to break down. When it begins to break down, you start to overreach. When you go beyond overreaching, you end up into overtraining. Once you hit overtraining, folks, you have to dig out of that hole. And that means you have to back the intensity way down, you have to back the volume way down, and you have to start resting. And I'll be honest with you, it will ruin your fitness. Take my word for it. Not only have I seen athletes there, I have been there. Don't be a dummy about it. I may sound condescending, but I have to because I've seen it over and over and over again. Do not be a dummy and try to hammer yourself in January and February only to flame out come March and April. Really, that's when you should start coming into your own, not hitting a downswing. All right. Now, again, special duration or special care really needs to be paid to your duration and your intensity. I mentioned before, people tend to like to do high intensity work for way too long. But this is also applies to the actual intensities of the intervals themselves and the duration of the intervals themselves. And that's where you can take a look at my free download for this particular podcast. My freebie is a cheat sheet that will give you some common interval sets, durations, intensities, rest periods. It's kind of a cheat sheet so that you can add some of this work into your training plan. Now, if you're using one of my training plans, you're going to have it in there already. But if you're not and you just want to add some high intensity work to your training plan, I know there's a lot of you out there that are listening to this that don't actually follow my training plans. You follow whoever's, or you're just planning your own stuff. All right. If you're doing that, go ahead over to tailwind-coaching.com/67, scroll to the bottom of the podcast show notes, and you can actually download that freebie. The only thing I ask is you either share it with your friends on Facebook, Twitter, or some other social network, or subscribe to the Tailwind Coaching newsletter so I can send you some even cooler stuff. So head on over, take a look at that. Now, duration and intensity programming, again, very supremely important. It is the key to well-planned high-intensity interval training work. Too much of either intensity or duration, again, can push you towards that overtraining threshold. And that's a very fine line that you're going to need to learn to skirt. And that's why I said before that once I get into the build phase, I start to test my athletes, the ones that I coach, my clients, my patients, whoever, I test them. Start adding more and more high intensity work. And if they can handle the 2 days a week, now I know where their limits can be. If they start to flame out with 2 days a week, we have to back them down. Either their duration or their intensity has to back down. Or I need to back down duration and intensity of other ancillary work. Now, learning how to properly schedule a high intensity interval training session among the rest of your training days, as I pointed out here, is that huge learning process. And you have to have a real conscious idea of what your body can handle. But the number one thing you need to find out what your body can handle, you have to understand that recovery is absolutely the key to programming your high-intensity interval training work. Now, I just got done saying that intensity and duration is absolutely paramount for you to look at when you're programming. Now you're telling me that recovery is the most important thing. Well, it is. It really is. All three of them are incredibly important, and they all play off of one another. Recovery is really where the magic of high-intensity interval training happens. That's where your body adapts to the training stress that's been placed upon it and makes changes to make the next round of high-intensity interval training a little bit easier. This is where your body decides, wow, dude, I got called on to do something that I've never been able to do before. I better put some machinery in place so that if I ever have to do that again, I can actually do that. Otherwise, I might get eaten by a lion, or I might get mauled by a bear, or I might get attacked by another tribe and, you know, my head cut off and shrunk in the jungle. Honestly, I don't know where I got that, but it sounded good at the time. Recovery is truly, truly where the magic of high-intensity work happens, and it is one of the most important things, along with duration and intensity, to consider when you're programming your high-intensity intervals. Now, when we're talking about recovery, we're not just talking about recovery between workouts or between days. We're talking about recovery in between intervals and in between sets of intervals. As we talked about before, the concept of high-intensity interval training relies upon the rest periods between intervals to ensure the quality work that you're attempting to complete is completable. If you're doing anaerobic intervals, but your body is not fully recharged from the previous interval, you can't do a quality interval. It's as simple as that. You cannot do 10-second all-out maximal 1,500-watt sprints with only 10 seconds of recovery in between. It's not possible. Again, the concept of HIIT training really relies upon the rest intervals, the rest between the intervals, to ensure that a quality workout can be completed. When you're talking about high-intensity work, I'm going to go ahead and give a general guideline here, that rest intervals need to be at least 1:1 to the work interval. What does that mean? When I say at least 1:1, if you're doing a 3-minute VO2 max interval, you should be taking at least 3 minutes to recover before starting your next 3-minute interval. Sometimes you'll be looking at rest intervals up to 4:1, 5:1, all right, rest to work, all right? So 5 times the amount of rest that you would be doing for any other interval. What would this actually mean? Well, this would basically mean that you're doing, you know, maybe a 10-second all-out 1,500-watt sprint, you're going to need probably more than 40 seconds to recover from that. But let's say you're doing a two-minute zone 6 effort. You're doing 160-170% of your functional threshold power, and you're trying to go for about 2 minutes. You're going to want to expect about 8 minutes or so of recovery to be able to do another completely efficient zone 6 interval again and hold that 160-170% of threshold. That is what I'm talking about when I say ballpark between 1:1 work to rest and 4 or 5:1 work to rest. Rest intervals are absolutely important. I can't say it enough. I can't stress that enough, that the rest intervals have to be there. Now, rest intervals are really dependent upon the goal of the HIIT session that you're doing right now. If you're doing an aerobic HIIT session, obviously you're going to use fewer rest intervals, or shorter rest intervals, I should say. If you're doing an anaerobic session, you're going to need longer rest intervals. And again, the reason why, if you refer back to part one, aerobic adaptation, we want to try and keep that heart rate up as high as we can keep it. We also want to prevent too much recharging of that anaerobic work capacity, that W prime. And again, that is what helps us to stimulate VO2 max type adaptations, or those aerobic, top-end aerobic adaptations. For anaerobic adaptations, the only way we actually truly achieve those is by performing quality anaerobic activity. And by performing quality anaerobic activity, we need to rest in between those intervals so that we're able to perform that quality activity. All right, so rest intervals are very dependent upon the goal. Whether you're doing a 1-to-1 or you're doing a 4-to-1 rest-to-work interval ratio, that's dependent on what the goal of the workout is. And of course, it goes without saying that when your interval quality declines during later sets of those high-intensity intervals, that could mean a couple of things. Work capacity has either been completely exceeded and your body is just unable to restore the energy substrates that you're using, or simply your rest interval is too short and it's just not restoring it fast enough. That's an entire other possibility. And of course, if you really want to evaluate which of those is true, again, I am a huge fan of using a power meter, particularly Stages power meter, if you're looking for one. Again, help support the show, click through the link in the podcast show notes and you can purchase from Stages directly. But I'm a huge advocate of using a power meter, especially when you're doing anaerobic type activity, because heart rate simply cannot predict, or is not accurate enough to actually predict, how well you're doing these intervals. Huge, huge fan of the power meter, especially for the anaerobic part of it. And of course, things like Golden Cheetah, WKO, Training Peaks, anything that will allow you to evaluate W prime, your anaerobic work capacity, or your ability for your body to simply recharge from a high intensity interval. There's a number of graphs, a number of things that I've posted, and you'll see the recharge rate on the W prime graph. And you can see the goal of, for example, a 30-30 session to keep that W prime as low as possible for as long as possible. And that's a real key, and that shows you you've done a high quality aerobic HIIT interval. All right. So a good way to evaluate whether your rest intervals are too short, or they're too long, or you're just plain overdoing what your body's capable of doing, throw your power files into Golden Cheetah, see what you come up with, see what your body is able to do, and see if you're doing it correctly. So now, let's take a look at a couple of examples. This is what all of you are waiting for, I'm sure. Examples of the high-intensity interval training programming. And again, I have to remind you, if you're interested in picking up my HIIT cheat sheet, head on over to tailwind-coaching.com/67, scroll down through the show notes, and either like or share or subscribe to the newsletter, and you can download that cheat sheet for free. But let's get into some of the intervals that you're going to see on that cheat sheet. All right, starting off with aerobic HIIT training. The very first thing, one of my favorite things that you'll see in a lot of my programs, especially my peak build criterium plans, my climbing plans, you'll see this as well. You'll see the on-off type interval. Now, typically, I do these as 30-30s, but it can be any variety of, and 30-30 means 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. It can be any variety of 20-40, 40-20, 45-15, 15-45, 10-50. You can do the worst 5 minutes known to mankind, which is a, obviously these are on slash off. So you do a 10-50, a 20-40, a 30-30, a 40-20, and a 50-10 all in a row, 5 minutes. And it's the worst 5 minutes known to mankind. It really sucks, actually. It's terrible, but it gives you a great VO2 max type boost. But these aerobic high intensity interval training sessions, these 30-30s, are designed to really drop that anaerobic work capacity and do more work sub about 25% of Watt Prime, where that VO2 max adaptation really happens. So that's one. And there's a number of ways you can vary the intensities with this. You can go to 120% of FTP on, and you can do 100% off. You can do 120 on and 80 off. You can do all kinds of stuff with this. It's a really versatile type of interval. It's a really valuable type of interval, and it gets you a lot of adaptation in a very short period of time. Usually I have people work with three sets of five of these, so three sets of 5 minutes, anywhere between maybe about 3 minutes or so in between is a really good way to do it. That prevents too much W prime recharge and too much anaerobic capacity recharge, and really helps you at least get motivated to attempt a second set. Let's put it that way. Second thing you're going to see on here is going to be the short VO2 max interval. My favorite, and I have a couple of clients who will tell you that I am an absolute sadist with these. My favorite workout for these is the 9x3 minute, the 9x3s. As it's written, you're going to see x by threes. So typically what I'll start people with is somewhere between 5 and 6 reps of 3 minutes at near the top of the VO2 max range. We're talking about a zone 5 plus area, somewhere around 120% of FTP. And rest period, again, following that 1-to-1 work to rest pattern, is going to be about 3 minutes in between intervals. And you're going to repeat 5, 6, 7, 8. My favorite is the 9x3. Don't know why. I love the 9x3. It gets great adaptation built. It's just under an hour. All right, so 3x9 is 27 minutes of actual high intensity work and 27 minutes of 24 minutes of rest. So 27 plus 24 is 51 minutes, and that actually gives you a few minutes to warm up and to cool down as well. That's why I love the 9x3s. It's in and out under an hour, and you cry when you're done. Let's put it that way. And again, rest periods for the 9x3s or the x by 3s are 1-to-1, so you're looking at about 3 minutes of rest, and your rest intensity could be anywhere between zone 3 all the way up to threshold, depending on what your goal is. Now, there have been a number of times, a few times, I've experimented with dropping the rest periods on these x by 3 intervals with some clients, and there's absolutely a limit as to what you can do with that, but it's a great way to train for especially hilly races and hilly fondos for the attacks, or it's a great way to train for rolling terrain as well, so keep that in mind. Next thing up here, next aerobic HIIT type workout we're going to do the x by 8s. These are the long duration VO2 intervals. These are the extent of what your VO2 max capabilities really are, and typically, I end up doing 3x8s with most people. And again, I keep to... This is one of the examples where I actually break the 1-to-1 rest-to-work ratio. When... No, well, let me back up. It depends on the actual goal. It depends on... if I'm training somebody for a climbing race, if I'm training them for a criterium, it depends on the goal here. But very frequently I'll do a 3x8 session, and I'll do anywhere between 3 and 5 minutes of rest. So shorter rest periods of time. But if I'm doing those shorter rest intervals, I'm doing those 8-minute work intervals at less than 120% of FTP. Typically about 110 to 105% of FTP. Seems like it's pretty low, but let me tell you, 8 minutes above threshold, it hurts. It hurts bad. Think of going outside and finding an 8-minute climb and hitting it and never going below threshold. Think about that. It's a lot harder than it sounds. The reason here why we actually ignore, actually we don't ignore, but we break the 1-to-1 work to rest to work ratio here. The reason we break it is because if you gave 8 minutes of rest, and I've tested this via Golden Cheetah and W Prime modeling, 8 minutes of rest would just completely recharge your W Prime stores, and you would end up spending very little time below that magic 25% number. So that's the reason why we actually cheat and break the one-to-one rest-to-work ratio rule there. So those are the long-duration intervals. And of course, there's durations anywhere in between, and you really just need to adjust the intensity of those in-between intervals for what you're doing. If you're doing, say, 5x5 minute intervals, which is another favorite of mine, I typically do those between 110 and 115% of FTP. And again, I break the rest to work ratio rule, and I go between 3 and 4 minutes of rest between those. So that's a bonus. You're not going to hear that on the, you're not going to see that on my, my HIIT cheat sheet. So keep that in mind. Next up, we have cardio strength training or boot camp type concepts. Now, these are the things that I've got some call for lately because it's winter. A lot of people are spending some time in the gym. They're doing some high intensity training in the gym. Boot camp and cardio strength training type things are usually your circuit training type issues where you're doing 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. And it's usually something that's like kettlebell swings or battle ropes or something of that nature. The idea here is you're going to be huffing and puffing, sweating like a dog, running from station to station to try and get your heart rate up, and you're trying to keep your heart rate up. So essentially, you're taking that 30-30 concept that I just talked about, and you're moving it into the gym and just using bigger, heavier things to actually accomplish the same goal as those 30-30s. All right, so that's something to really keep in mind, that you can take that 30-30, move it into the gym, and you can do it with anything. You can do it with muscle snatches. You can do it with battle ropes. You can do it with tire flips. You can do it with jump rope. You can do it with pull-ups or push-ups. You can do it with pretty much anything you like. And as long as it gets the heart rate up, again, the idea is to burn up that anaerobic energy, that anaerobic work capacity, and keep the heart rate going so that you have to push through that VO2 max in order to get some benefit there. All right, so there's a couple of short examples of aerobic HIIT training. Let's move on to the anaerobic HIIT training. All right, moving on to anaerobic HIIT training intervals. These are the intervals that you must obey that work to rest interval, or rest to work interval as it may be. Because in this case, anaerobic capacity is what we're trying to look for here, and anaerobic work requires that W prime recharge. So the number one thing here that I love doing, and I'm talking about me, I don't know about you, you're listening out there, track starts. Track starts are a beast, but they turn you into an animal very quickly. Track start is very simple. You shift into a big gear, 53, 15, or bigger. I do these in a 53-12 or 53-11 if I happen to be running an 11-26 cassette at the time. But a 53 plus a very small cog. You're going to coast down to almost a stop, 2-3 miles an hour, just enough so that you don't fall over. You're going to get your hands down in the drops, and you're going to crank for all you are worth. And I mean all you are freaking worth. You're going to turn yourself inside out, and you're going to do your damnedest to accelerate that gear as much as you can. Take that cadence absolutely as high as you possibly can before you burn out. The idea is to hold huge, huge power as long as you possibly can. Now, those of you who are noting that I call this a track start. The reason why is if any of you have actually ridden a fixed gear track bike, pretty much every single race starts with something like this. Unless you're up on the boards and you're coming down starting like a scratch race or something like that. If you're doing a standing start race, this is the bread and butter for getting off the line. And this will absolutely, without a doubt, 100%, are you listening to this, will, without a doubt, increase your acceleration capacity, your ability to get off the line, your ability to sprint. I guarantee it. Now, granted, track starts have a requirement of some pretty good neuromuscular coordination. And if you've been doing proper base work, you'll have all that neuromuscular coordination taken care of already. But the idea here is you want to spin that thing up 110, 120, 130, 150 RPM if possible. This is why typically when I have people start track starts, we'll start them in something like that 53-15, and I will have them throughout the progression of their interval training move towards a 53-12, 53-11 type gear, just so that they can actually understand and get the neuromuscular capacity down as well, and then start adding more tension. Next, on the anaerobic, and of course, before I go any further, you're talking significant recovery for this, 5 minutes minimum in between track starts. Trust me, if you try to do any less than that, you will suffer. Your work will suffer, and you will get nowhere fast. Next, moving on, we're talking about jumps or attacks during other intervals. So these are a great thing to add during your base training. Remember, I talked about doing that one day per week of high intensity work during your base training. This is a great interval process or great high intensity or HIIT work to add during your base training. Pick one day, maybe you're doing sweet spot training that day. Maybe you have 2x10 minute blocks of sweet spot training, or maybe 4x8 minute blocks of sweet spot work. 1 to 2 minute attacks during those intervals. So how would this work? During the first minute of that sweet spot interval, you would attack, ride hard, zone 6 type effort for a minute. Settle back into your sweet spot for the rest of it, and then move on. You can repeat that 1 minute attack every 4 to 6 minutes. If you're going to do 2 minute attacks, do 2 minutes at zone 6, probably about 150% of FTP, somewhere around 130% FTP, somewhere lower. And then take 8 minutes recovery and then do it again. Again, you're looking to burn up some anaerobic work capacity. You're looking to really get some good anaerobic work in and then give enough time to recover. The one thing I will not tell you to do these type of intervals during, and that is functional threshold power intervals, FTP intervals. Do not attempt to go anaerobic while you're attempting to do a flat-out 20-minute FTP block. It's not a good idea. You will not be able to recover enough to actually get any benefit out of this. So anything sweet spot or below, go for it. Anything sweet spot, anything above sweet spot in that 95 to 105% FTP, don't even bother. Save it for another day. All right? Moving on again, we're talking race winners, another favorite of mine. And you can ask a couple of my athletes. I have a nasty habit of combining a 9x3 block with a race winner block. And I'm fairly certain a couple of my coaching clients have wanted to either throw up or punch me in the face. Or maybe both, or maybe punch me in the face and then throw up on my punched-in face. They suck. That's a really difficult interval block, and God bless you if you can actually get through it and get through it well. You're a freaking steamroller, man. You deserve it. But a race winner, essentially, you're talking anywhere between 10 to 15 seconds all-out sprint, followed by anywhere between 15 to 45 seconds of zone 6 type work, anywhere between 125, 130% of FTP, somewhere around there. You drop down to FTP level work for 3 minutes, and then finish it off with a 10 or 15 second all-out maximal effort sprint. What's the goal of this anaerobic type work? Well, obviously you have the sprint at the beginning. You have the zone 6 work following it immediately, so it actually continues to follow that critical power curve. And then you taper off into FTP. But at the end of that, you kick up again. You hammer it one more time. So you deplete watt prime significantly, deplete, 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 hold steady at a low level of W prime, maybe a little bit of recharge, just enough so that you can actually kick out another hard sprint at the end. Rest interval for this, I will typically cheat again on the 4-to-1 rest to work interval, and I'll say about 3 minutes rest, maybe four. Essentially, this is a trial and error bit. You need exactly enough rest to be able to make sure those first and last sprints are actually of quality work. So if you can do that with 2 minutes rest, God bless you, you're a freaking animal steamroller. Use the word steamroller a couple times now. You're an animal steamroller. You're a great, great beast on a freaking bike if you can do that. But again, these are designed to simulate the last lap in a criterium. They're designed to simulate a breakaway, chasing down a breakaway, attacking a breakaway, whatever, what have you. Moving on again. Now we're talking track type work. Track bike work, we're talking the flying lap, the flying 100, the flying 200. The flying lap and anything, basically you're ramping up to speed and then you're just ripping off a flying 100, 200 meter, 200 meter or track lap. The idea behind these things is you're ramping up the intensity. So you're really starting to drop into that zone 5, zone 6 type effort. If you're doing a flying 100, that should be a zone 7 effort. If you're doing a 200, that should be anywhere between a zone 7 and upper zone 6. A flying lap, depending on the length of the track, 300 meters, you could be talking about maybe a minute max. You're talking a zone 6 effort. So these flying intervals, these flying laps, are really zone 6, zone 7 type intervals. And of course, again, you're going to need rest in between. You're talking anywhere between 4 and 8 times the rest. So if you're doing, say, a flying 200, you're going to want anywhere between 800 and 1,000 meters of rest, period. That can mean light, easy pedaling. It can mean constant, like, zone 3 plus sweet spot type work. It just depends on what your goal is for the day. The idea here with these is you want that high intensity burst, and then you want to back down and let your body recover. High intensity burst, let your body recover. All right. Anaerobic work in the gym. This is anaerobic strength training, folks. This is generally explosive type work. And that kind of work is stuff like muscle snatches, Olympic lifts. You could be doing squats with chains, which actually add a completely different dimension to squatting and actually force you to really power through the top of the lift as opposed to just sort of slack off at the top of the lift. You can be doing kettlebell works, you can be doing box jumps, you can be doing any kind of plyometrics. Sled pushes, sled pulls are great for this kind of strength training. And again, the idea here, keep in mind, this is not cardio strength training. This is not a circuit training type activity or exercise. You need to allow sufficient recovery in between, 2, 3, 4 minutes in between. If you're going to do a set of tire flips, explosive tire flips, or a set of explosive muscle snatches, you need to give enough time in between that set and your next set of activity for your body to recover so you can adequately perform the next work intervals. All right, so a very fine distinction between cardio strength training or boot camp type concepts and the strength training, the anaerobic strength training. Anaerobic strength training is really power training, if you want to look at it that way. Power or density training is another good way to look at it. So keep that in mind. And finally, something that really doesn't fit in any particular place. And I'll be doing a video post about this real soon. In fact, the video post may actually be out before this podcast is. So if it is, there'll be a link to this in the podcast show notes. And that is fartlek training, another high-intensity interval training tool. And honestly, I have to say, I hate things that have me sitting in front of a computer or a TV, but Zwift, which I'm sure most of you have heard of, it's a platform where you can ride virtually against people around the globe. Zwift is actually a really great tool to do high-intensity fartlek-type training. Why? Well, as a little history here, fartlek training developed in the mid-1930s by Swedish scientists and Swedish coaches. They were looking for a way to train their cross-country skiers to beat the Finns, which they had almost never done. And the concept behind this entire system, this entire training tool, is high-intensity intervals interspersed randomly. Randomly is actually the key here. In and among a lower intensity, longer duration exercise. So it's kind of like that 1 minute or 2 minute attack during your longer intervals, during your sweet spot intervals. But the key here is the randomness. And this is why Zwift is so good at this. You can ride on Zwift and you can actually pick a wheel to follow. And it might be really hard for you to follow that wheel. Or it might be really easy. Or somebody might go blowing by you and you want to close down that gap. Or somebody's climbing a whole lot faster than you and you want to close them down, so you pick up the pace a lot. Okay? Fartlek training is awesomely done with other people. In fact, it's one of the key reasons to group ride with other people, to Zwift ride with other people, etc., etc. Now, you can do it with a couple other people on a trainer, in a room, in a class, but it's a whole lot better when you actually have to respond to somebody else's efforts and you can see those efforts. All right. So fartlek training, while it's a very randomized tool, it's a great anaerobic and aerobic fartlek training or high intensity interval training tool. What you get is what you get. You make the choice to either chase the guy down or not. You can make the choice to either try and go for the sprint again after you just climbed a hill or not. Really very dependent and very random as well. So keep that in mind as well, and keep a lookout for the link in the podcast show notes to that fartlek training video as it relates to Zwift. All right. A lot of info covered. I know I'm running a little bit long again, but there's a lot of info in here. If you have any questions, please, please, please feel free to continue emailing me. The questions I've gotten are great. And as you noted, a lot of people have them. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to post them in the Tailwind Coaching forums, tailwind-coaching.com/forums, because I'm sure other people have those questions as well, or post them on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. Do not forget, tailwind-coaching.com/67. Scroll on down to the podcast show notes, and you can actually pick up the free high-intensity interval training cheat sheet, which will cover all of the intervals that I talked about in this show. You can look at it. You can figure out when to plan it into your training plans, and you can go out and give these a try. Thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate your listening, and I always appreciate my listeners. Again, take a look at the discount code at the end of the podcast. Until I talk to you next time, ride safe, ride happy, ride hard, hit your training, keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down, and I will be talking to all of you again very, very soon.